Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Greg Corumbus along with Jim Garrity. And Jim, it's kind of hard to find really good news here in Washington, but we have found some in Louisiana as far as Republicans and conservatives go. Bobby Jindal, of course, remains a popular governor there. His handling of the BP spill going very well. Louisiana, of course, has elections in odd-numbered years, so you'd usually think that the Democrats would actually have someone in mind to run against him, and apparently they don't. Far cry from where they were several years ago in that state, being able to beat Bobby Jindal in the governor's race. Not anymore.
Yeah, and I think what's worth noting in this is that pretty much since he's appeared on the scene, Bobby Jindal has been a rising star amongst in Republican circles. This is a guy who, obviously, the first Indian-American governor of a state. And, Democrats would have loved to knock him off and to kind of, blunt his appeal and ambitions. He gave a response to an early Obama speech that a lot of people kind of panned and thought was stiff and just didn't connect and was, just a disappointing and awkward speaking style. I didn't really think it was that bad, but, a lot of folks kind of, thought, all right, well, that's the end of him. And then the BP spill occurs, and he ends up, just being a very effective voice of Louisianans during that time. I it's not like the Democrats have a really pressing deadline on this. I looked it up, and they have until September to find someone to file papers. I just think what's kind of interesting is that no Democrat has in the state has even made any much noises about this. There's no talk. No one's filed papers. No one's talking about fundraising for such an endeavor. And Jindal, at least the beginning of the year, had $9 million, which is a heck of a lot for a governor's race in Louisiana. So I just think this is a fairly good sign. You could chalk this up as part of the continuing death of the Democrats in the South. The other kind of fascinating factor of this is that in 2005, 2006, 2007, Democrats were absolutely certain that Katrina was going to mean, that the Republican brand was going to be mud and that, there would be this lasting enmity to the Republican Party, and that very much hasn't been the case, to the point where you can argue how effective or how real or how major the Democratic Party is in Louisiana right now.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I'm sure a lot of folks there along the Gulf Coast aren't huge fans of FEMA or even President Bush, but they had a lot of blame to spread around, and they did spread it around. Kathleen Blanco didn't even run for re-election. Somehow Ray Nagin got reelected before finally stepping down recently. But Democrats deserve plenty of the blame, and Bobby Jindal has shown that you can't step in and do the job right. So good for him. Whether this vaults him into any type of presidential talk, he says there won't be for 2012. Obviously, he would have just been reelected if that's the case. On to number two now. And Jim, we've kind of talked about it to some extent this week, just in how the president has handled or not handled the U.S. response to crises around the world, from Libya to especially the Japanese nuclear plant. But just looking at the crisis in Japan, how day to day we're hearing how the next 24 to 48 hours could be critical in what happens to the people of Japan with this nuclear cloud. We hear about the Fukushima 50 who are really putting their lives on the line, and in some cases knowing that they probably won't live much longer as they try and contain this as much as possible. But then there's also the question that some have asked in the wake of criticism of Obama, of the Republicans as well. What would you have Obama do? What would Republicans do differently? And I think that's a good question as we consider who might be the standard bearer next year.
It is. And I guess, I've all week long, I've been writing about this in the Morning Jolt, and certain of my readers believe, Jim, I think the threat of this is being overhyped by the anti-nuke crowd. This expert over here says the radiation risk is not that bad. But then you see stuff like at one point the U.S. experts talking to ABC News were probably about as dire a news report as I have ever heard. Apparently telling them, saying, look, we know this is a suicide mission, but we're telling them to put more people in there, which is – the word suicide mission really shouldn't believe – I don't like to see them on the front page.
Right.
That's generally very, very bad news. So, so far today, it looks like things have not gone from bad to much, much worse. Japan is a key U.S. ally, and they may be dealing with – Chernobyl was bad enough, but that was in a country that hadn't just endured a 9.0 earthquake and having all kinds of problems with infrastructure and finding shelter, etc. You look at problems like this, Greg, I'm less enthused about a presidential bid from Donald Trump at moments like this. And I think very highly of guys like Herman Cain, but as president of the United States, you are dealing with some potentially really large-scale, horrific life and death circumstances. And I get wary of anybody who's doing this as a publicity stunt or as a way of building up their name ID or a way of building up a fundraising list or anything like that. So there's a part of me that is just wants to say, like, I feel like the gravitas factor in the 2012 race may be increasing exponentially if we end up watching something that is just horrific. And it's one of those – the other thing I note is that it's kind of fascinating to hear from the number of readers who believe that the U.S. government is overhyping the threat, that when we're evacuating Americans from the area, that we – and we're telling Americans to stay at least 50 miles from the plant, that somehow we're doing this as some sort of sop to the green movement. That underscores a dangerous level of distrust between the American people and their government. And secondly, you know, I think presuming the threat is as dire as it seems, I think the Obama administration is actually going to give them a little bit of credit, very delicately handling the possibility that they think the Japanese government is botching this. You know, it's a messy situation with all kinds of ominousness, but I just look at that and think, wow, we really need somebody with their A game in the Oval Office as quickly as possible.
I think that's right. And, you know, we saw at 9/11 that the celebrity candidates were pretty much out of vogue, the Jesse Venturas. And then, of course, a few years later, we got Al Franken. So when the crisis is a little bit in the rearview mirror, you tend to fade away a little bit.
Gray, I just know, you know, that Al Sharpton was treated as a major candidate throughout the entire Democratic nomination process.
That is correct.
I mean, you know, generally you're right. You know, 9/11 did bring out this burst of seriousness, but unfortunately, such things tend to be short-lived.
Yeah, the recovery phase tends to get shorter and shorter on that. The only thing I'd add is, you know, you can't expect someone to necessarily be Superman and blow the radiation back into a plant. All you can expect out of your president is competence and to surround himself with people of competence, regardless of what the issue and the factor might be. So not that Herman Cain or Newt Gingrich or Mitch Daniels or anybody would necessarily have a magic wand to solve a problem like this, but to have people who are engaged on the scene, know what they're doing, know what they're talking about. That's what we want. We want a person who's engaged and competent. Unfortunately, we have neither right now in the Oval Office. So on to number three now, and a person who desperately wanted to be the person in the Oval Office to answer these 3 a.m. calls, which I'm pretty sure is exactly about the time, Eastern time, that the Japanese crisis did happen with the earthquake and tsunami. Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, basically saying in no uncertain terms, she's hitting the bricks. She told Wolf Blitzer she doesn't want to be Secretary of State again. She doesn't want to be Secretary of Defense again. She doesn't want to be Vice President. She doesn't ever want to run for President again. But some folks are telling The Hill that she is actually fed up with President Obama because he can't make up his mind on Libya or a whole host of other things. So it's not just exhaustion, which obviously can be a factor when you're Secretary of State, but just sheer frustration with a guy who can't decide what his policies are.
Yeah, I just know, Greg, I think it's actually the Daily, which is the new iPad-only publication debuting that has, unfortunately, you know, unnamed sources. So we don't know whether this is just, you know, Joe Schmo saying that Hillary Clinton is fed up with the president or whether it really is her close insiders and confidants and such. It certainly seems plausible. We all know that, you know, Hillary and Obama had a long and arduous fight throughout the 2008 nomination process. And we were all kind of surprised to see her in the Secretary of State position. You kind of figured at some point they would have just a serious disagreement on these sorts of issues. And, you know, that sooner or later the, you know, she would start, you know, chafing under the problems of being a good soldier. It sounds like she can't wait for him to make a decision on Libya and is having some awkward moments in dealing with European allies, of them, you know, European allies expecting to know that the U.S. knows what its position is. And very clearly, it seems like the U.S. doesn't, that we don't really want – we know what we don't want to do. We don't know what we do want to do. It's like it's one of those things where if Hillary really does feel this way, there's a part of me that would say it probably would be wise for her to depart the position sooner rather than later. And I wonder if at some point she may have, you know, signed on hoping to be able to guide the president in what she would perceive to be the right direction. But, you know, you can bring a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. At this point, you can bring, you know, urge the president to make what you think is the right decision, but you cannot make him decide. And right now, our policy on Libya is this, you know, outright denial, this insistence that the noose is tightening on Gaddafi, even as his forces advance. Beyond that, you know, apparently now we're contemplating some sort of military action, but we still want to go through the UN. And everybody knows the Russians and Chinese will block any serious action. So we're back to square one again. You know, what our policy is remains a muddle. It's not encouraging. It is not confidence building. And it is, you know, pretty much perhaps what we should come to expect from President Obama.
Jim, I don't know that there's a huge percentage of Americans. I know it's a growing percentage of Americans who have a fondness for President Bush. I remember when he was mocked a few years ago for saying, "I'm the decider." And a lot of people obviously didn't like a lot of his decisions. But the guy knew what he wanted to do, and he made decisions. And I think that's something that a lot of people find kind of refreshing right now. And hopefully we have a nominee in 2012 on the Republican side that kind of has that same approach, and only in a more conservative way on some of the key fiscal issues, of course. So being the decider, not that bad, as it turns out. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Same to you, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us tomorrow for Friday's 3 Martini Lunch.